Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Five times are hitting the road again this summer, and it's the Champions League heroes heading to Ireland in August.
Andrei Shevchenko, the European Footballer of the Year, star man in the Milan side, must score.
He must score.
He saved it!
Believe it.
Jamie Carragher and Luis Garcia host a gala dinner at the Marca Hotel in Dublin, August 20th.
Once a European champion, always a European champion.
24 hours later, Luis Garcia, Didi Haman and Jamie Carragher are at the Waterfront Theatre Belfast, August 21st. Then in September, Barnes, Aldridge and Haman in London on Thursday the 11th. Fowler, McAteer and Whelan in Newport, South Wales on Thursday the 18th. All details and tickets of all those events on fivetimes.co/events. It'd be great to see you there.
Liverpool have their hands on the European Cup again, and this time it's for keeps.
Start with sort of growing up. What was your family life like growing up in Scotland?
In Motherwell.
In Motherwell, the main streets of Motherwell.
In Motherwell, yeah. It was a horror story. the funny thing about when you're a child and you're growing up, that part of your life, you grow out of it quickly. I mean, you know, from you're born till, just say, I got married when I was 20. So that part, all the difficult parts in that, it sort of just fades a bit, you know, and then you go on with the rest of your life. The growing up part, it was pretty tough in a way because we lived in a room in the kitchen, right? What they call the room in the kitchen. And that's all it was, a room and a kitchen. These two rooms, which one room would have sink in it, no hot water, no electricity, it was gas, and just one bedroom. And there were six of us, six kids, and my mother and father, and then my father died when I was six. So my mother was left with six kids to bring up on a widow's pension, you know, just after the war. I mean, I hear people have got, you know, stories of hardships when they brought up it. And I don't want to, like, say, well, mine was as tough as anybody's. But it was pretty tough. Because, you know, that six of you in this room and kitchen, living on a widow's pension. There was two kids younger than me. And from early on, I mean, it was, as I say, no electricity, no hot water. I mean, it was just in Scotland. Always seemed to me Scotland was freezing for 6 months of the year. It was always, you know, ice everywhere, I thought. But you muddled by. Got my first job as paper boy, and I had a job delivering milk with the milkman, the horse and cart, and the milk running up. There was what we call closes in Scotland, running up the tenements, you know, putting the milk at people's door. And so up in the morning to do that, freezing cold mornings. But as I say, these, I never really think, oh, it was terrible. And it's just, you did it because you had to do it to get a few bob. And then the newspaper rounds that I did in the morning and after school. I'd get to the shop for 5 o'clock, papers would come in. We'd go up to the Motherwell station and get the papers, come off the train from Glasgow, and then you go and drop them off at people's houses and things. So that's the way I was brought up. And in school, I mean, I enjoyed school. School was great because then you get into the football and playing for the school team when, you know, you're 10-year-old or whatever. Was great. That was because I was a big fan of the game in Motherwell. My team would go to Motherwell, walk. I mean, you walk everywhere because, as I say, you've done the price of buses. And I'd go to the game on a Saturday and used to climb over the school next to it and then go over the wall. So I was doing this for years, really, getting into the game for nothing. But to follow Motherwell, it was great. Motherwell had a good team going through the 50s, and we won the league. No, didn't we win the league? We won the cup, and we won the league cup, and it was great. So you followed your team, and you had to go to games to see it because no TV. So that was part of the thing, was going to the game, you know, the crowds and all the rest. It was fantastic. So Motherwell were my team. Played with the school, the junior school, went to the big school, got in the team there, and that was great. But also played with Boys Brigade. I was in the Boys Brigade, and I played with their team as well. So I was getting plenty of team football. We played on ash pitches and horrible pitches. All, but the fact that you were playing was great, and you get boots. The boots we had, I got hand-down boots from somebody. So I had to put, they were too big for me, to put paper in his toes, you know. And they were really big, hard, toe-cap boots. And the studs, you put them on the last and take them up to the the cobblers, and he would hammer the studs in. And then, of course, you're playing on the hard surfaces and ice and snow and all sorts of things. And it would wear down, and the nails would come through your boot. And I was no kidding. I remember trying to get my boot off once, and the nails were in my sole of my feet. So I couldn't pull my foot out of the boot. And blood everywhere. But the football was the thing that kept you going, and we played football in our street, on the streets, you know. We play in back courts and playing games, heading against the wall and all that. And I became a good head of the ball because we played all those games, heading games. So you could, you know, after years of doing that, you never think, I'm doing this and well, one day being a good header. You were just doing it because that was the games that you played. You know, and all the climbing games and jumping games and stuff. So, I mean, it was that kind of boyhood for me. All games, sport, everything. When I was at school, I was in the running for the school, but I was in hurdles, and I was a hurdler. I learned the technique of hurdling, and I was quite good at it. That was me until we finally got out of this house and to a new house that was building in Motherwell. And we got a new house, which is wonderful. We got a house where, you know, indoor bathroom, the whole thing. So that was like luxury. Buckingham Palace as far as we were concerned. But then I was leaving school at 15, and I have to get a job. And I got a job in a garage right next to Motherwell's ground. In fact, it backed onto Motherwell's ground, this garage. And I was going to be, I don't know, some sort of, I think maybe, it wouldn't be a carpenter or something, but they were making some sort of things to put onto cars or lorries or whatever. But I hated it. And I used to jump the wall and go and watch the players training, you know, because there's no training ground. Motherwell, I used to see them kicking a ball about on the pitch, and I'd jump the wall from this garage and that. And then I got caught doing all that, and I got sacked. So as I said, I'm still 15-year-old, but I got a job in the steelworks, which was better than money. By that, I mean £2 or £3 a week. And you were on the shifts, 62 shift in the morning, 2 to 10 in the afternoon, and the night shift. So it was three shifts, and you did, you know, three shifts, boom, boom, boom. Every week you were on a different shift. And my job at the beginning was working at a furnace where when a little light would light up, a bulb would light up, which meant you had to drop a billet, which was a big steel, I don't know what they've got, billet, and it gets pushed off with this machine that I was operating. It would push and push and push, and one of the billets would come out the furnace and roll away on the rolling mills to get. And that was my first job. But I wasn't very good at it. Sometimes I'd roll two out instead of one, and the whole place would come to a halt. And so anyway, I got sacked from that. And then I got a job in a factory, the Motherwell Bridge and Engineering Company, right near where I lived. So it was just a walk across the road, down the road, you know, half a mile, and it was great. And they had a football team. And that was my first time of playing sort of a grown-ups. And it was a tough league. So I'm playing in this. And somebody said to me, why don't you go and try and get a game at North Motherwell Boys Club? Because they had better players and an established team. And again, they were right on my doorstep. So I went across to them and got signed up with them, the North Motherwell Boys Club. And that was me off and running, because I'm playing in a club that was great. The old boy, Pat McCourt, that ran it was great, great old boy. And I ended up playing, I got picked for the Scottish Boys Clubs. So that was my first sort of international recognition. Me and two other lads from our club, it was a big thing to play. And so that was me now being watched by the professional, looking down to see who's coming through. And we got asked, myself and these two lads, other lads, John McPhee, who went on and played at Blackpool, to go and train at Motherwell at night. So this is me being at Motherwell. And the training, when you look back on it, I mean, they hadn't a clue. They just running around the pitch. That was your training. You know, I mean, when you look back on it, and the kids of that era and subsequent, the next 25 years, 30 years in Scotland were all skillful players. Nothing to do with a football club making them skillful. You know, you're talking today's football where they're going to academies and learning tricks and learning this and learning that skills. We learned our skills on the streets. So we were already skillful. You know, and you hone that as you're in the pros, but they didn't learn you anything. All they were doing was run around the pitch and run up and down the terrace. He's fitness training. Yes, that was it. But Motherwell always keeping an eye on me, and they signed me on a what they call a provisional form, which meant that they had you signed up and you couldn't sign for another club. I mean, you're only an amateur kid, 16-year-old, but you couldn't sign for anybody else. But you'll get £2 a week, which is fantastic. So I've got my £2 from Motherwell, training there, you know, two nights a week, running around the pitch, and playing for my boys' club. Then I went to this next step up from your boys' club, which is what we call junior football in Scotland, which is the semi-pros. And it's a tough league. Men, no kids, it's men.
You know, well, you were quite a good boxer, weren't you?
Well, I was doing all the sports and all, but yeah, the apart from all the running and jumping and things and whatever, I liked the boxing, and there was a boxing gym near our house down the road a bit, and an old boy called Leechy Port, Leechy, an old pug as you used to call him, you know, the flat nose and everything, and it was a boxing club, and I got into that and started boxing, and but I was doing the two things, the boxing and the football.
think you could have been a boxer?
I don't know. I mean, I went to box one night with over in Ayrshire, and they put me in the wrong guy. They put me in the kid who was a good kid. And I was supposed to go in with an always fella. I don't know what happened anyway, but I go in with a good guy. But it was a good fight, and they were all quite keen for me to stick in at a boxing, you know. But Motherwell at that time, this was me getting to the stage of my football career where I'm playing the junior football, and I got picked for the juniors to play an international game as well. So again, that was me climbing up that ladder, as it were, and, you know, finding another level and getting up there. And the boxing, you know, had to take a sidestep, which I look back on it and I enjoy the boxing, but you never know how good you are at it. If you're no good at it, don't bother. You know, don't bother. Just stick to punching bags. They don't punch you back. So, but that's why I've always followed the boxing. I'm still to this day sitting and watch the boxing programmes and follow the fights. And I used to follow the fights in Liverpool. Down at the stadium, always went and followed the boxers there. And Liverpool are great boxers. So now that was me getting to the stage of now junior football, doing well, and Motherwell then said, "Okay, we'll take you on as a part-time pro," because I was still at my job. And the only reason I stayed in the steelworks and an engineering firm was to stay out of the army, because conscription was still on, which meant when you become 21, you're in the army. If you didn't have a trade, you're in at 18. So I got married at 20, so I'm thinking, well, I don't want to go in the army, you know. So, so I stayed that wave of at Motherwell, part-time player, getting paid, I think, £6 a week. I got in the first team very early, and amazing how things happen in football. There was a bit of a flu bug around, and a lot of the first team players got this flu bug, and the manager had phoned up the steelworks and said, "Could you tell Ainsley John to get up to the club at 3 o'clock or something, because we're going to play down against Schooner the South in a game, and he's going to come with us." So the gaffer at the steelworks said to me, "The club's been on, you better go home and get washed up and get up to the club for 3 o'clock. So I did that. Off we went in the bus from Motherwell, and I played that night against Queen of the South, and that was my first game. And the flu bug must still have been around, so I played the next game as well, and I never then was out of the team.
Well, that's it, you made your name at Motherwell.
Yeah.
And do you think that was the... do you think Motherwell gave you the grounding you needed?
Motherwell, at that time... funny how things in football, certain clubs and certain times in the evolution, get a team and it just happens. We got a team at Motherwell, all young players, same age as me, they were a year here or there, and we were terrific. We were playing football that the rest of the Scottish League were looking at going, "Oh, Motherwell, some team." All young fellas, as I say, my age group, you know, we were 18, 19 year olds. No, all of it my height, funny enough. I was not the smallest, but I wasn't the biggest either. So, five forwards that were all great, two wing halves, which are like midfield players, call them today, who could play. Charlie Aitken and Bert McCann could play, international players, and it was great. And we never won the league, because Celtic and Rangers we won it year in, year out, but we were the best footballing team. And through that, I then got my first international cap. I played against Germany at Hampden, and we beat them, and that was the first of my caps. All these things just sort of all follow on one and another, as if, you know, it's all pre-planned, but it just happens for me. I think these things just happen. So when I'm playing for Scotland, I'm playing at Morrabella and I'm getting £16 a week at Morrabella. And it was in the papers about players going to England and the maximum wage had been lifted in England just around that time. And it said Johnny Haynes is getting £100 a week and wow. all this stuff, you know. And I just got married. We had a child. And my wife said, you know, they're getting £100 a week in England. You're getting 16 quid a week here. But I didn't want to leave Motherwell because the football was great and I was loving it. She said, you should put in a transfer. I didn't want to do that, but she was egging me on to do it. And then right at that time, a guy called Charlie Mitten, who was the manager of Newcastle, come to my door one night after the game had been played, introduced himself and said, I'd like you to come to Newcastle. And they were first division team then. Big club, as I've always been a big club, Newcastle. So it was very tempting, and I said, what do you do then? He said, I'll tell you how to write a letter to give to the club. So he showed me what to do and told me what to do, and I wrote a letter, gave it to the club, and they went, no, you're not going. So that was it. I said, that's me snooker. So Charlie comes back to me and said, put another letter in. So I put another letter in, and the club said, okay, they thought, well, we'll cash in here, you know. And he wants to go, we'll cash in. And then the very day that they said, yes, I could go, Bill Shankly, for some, I don't know how he heard about it, obviously he has contacts in Scotland, and he then gets into a car with the chairman and motored up to Scotland. And I was playing that night in a local cup tie against Hamilton Mackies. And he's at the game, spoke to our manager, said they'd take him to Liverpool, agreed the fee, which was £37,500 or something.
It was a record fee.
Which was a record fee. Motherwell were, you know, quite greedy, and they thought, oh, this is good, you know. And, you know, I had got £20 to sign up for Motherwell. When they signed me officially as a pro, I got 20 quid. Now, you'd think they would have said, okay, and you know, you've done well, you've been 5 years with us, and you know, we've done well, and you've done well, there's something for you. Nothing. And I thought that would, you know, that really, really annoyed me about it. Only afterwards, because I was excited about going to Liverpool. And so Shanksy, we're off tomorrow morning in the car, and off we went. My wife, myself, left the baby with the mother, and off we came down to Liverpool.
Bill Shankly driving?
No. Oh, no. You wouldn't go in the boat. The boss driver. He was a mad driver. And he always had somebody driving anyway. The chairman drove. And we came down there. There was a board meeting that had been set up. And everything, I mean, I never, you know, today's football, agents, I think, are really destroying the game to a certain extent. But at the same time, the players who have got agents, and the players later on from my era who got agents, at least were getting a better deal. Because up to that time, like Motherwell did with me, they just ripped you off as a kid. You know, you don't know your worth. And nobody, I don't think enemies could walk into a chairman and say, I think I'm worth X amount. You just wouldn't do that, you know. Or to a manager, imagine telling Shankly, well, I think, you know, the offer was £30 a week. Wages, which was like more than double Motherwell, but so I was quite chuffed at that anyway. But an agent would have got more than that for me. He would, wouldn't he? But I was just happy to be signing it, and he was so convincing about Liverpool and where Liverpool were going, and they were a second division team at the time. But he was saying, we're going to be this, we're going to be that, and true to his word, everything he said, everything he believed in, happened. He made it happen. And it was then the next 10 years of my life was Liverpool, and you know, I couldn't have picked a better team.
There was a second division club, wasn't it?
Second division club.
What state was it in when you got there?
But believe me, that the fans, the thing that we as players, you know, when you run out there, the crowds, and the fans knock out, you go, wow, this is fantastic. wonderful. I mean, the stadium needed revamping, you know, the dressing room, the shower areas, the training ground needed all revamped. But all these things happened as we evolved in the first 2 or 3 years. These things were getting done, eventually completed, and then the stadium was added on behind the goal and at the Anfield Road end, that done as well. So things were, as we're as a team and grown as a team, and the club has grown as a club, these things were happening as well, and the fans were so much part of it, and that's because of Shanks. Shanks, from the word go, brought them right into the state. He brought them into the club. You are the most important people. You are the people that we play for. You're the people, you know, without you, where would we be? The greatest fans in the world. And even just, they always had a big crowd at Liverpool, but they never had that. They never had that involvement where they felt that they were that much part of the club, where the manager, you know, put them on a pedestal. And you say to the players, you know, you're playing for them, and don't let them down. And so they were more important. And we felt at times that the players, you know, it just thought so much of the fans. And the stories are endless about the things he used to do for fans. It was unbelievable. And that is the history of the club. That is where, I know there was a history before Bill Shankly, but he brought them from the dark ages to enlightenment. And this is where the club were going. And when you think about it, from second division to European football, to European finals. And now, the sad thing about it all was that us as the players and the boss never won a European title when we got the final and played poorly against Borussia Dortmund in the Cup Winners' Cup final. And the semi-final, we got cheated out of it by Inter Milan. So we could have been the first team to win it. But we were there. We'd gone that journey. We were now knocking on the door of European trophies to be a European team that everybody recognised as one of the great teams in Europe, even though our team didn't have the trophy to hold up. But what was happening then was the club were learning as well. You know, everybody was learning through this process. Fans were learning. Fans all knew to them going to Europe and, you know, they got to Rochdale before now, they're going to Europe, you know, all this kind of, the whole thing was just one big roller coaster, and it was brilliant to be there at the time. And from what was happening in the 60s, the 70s team were able to then, you know, having the staff had learned all these things from it, and they were the ones who started to pick up the trophies. And then the 80s team were a great team, and they went on and just took it even further. But that's the evolution, isn't it? You know, you've got to start somewhere.
Well, Shankly said that signing of you and Ron Yates started it all off. Do you agree with that?
Well, it was nice of him to say that, but as I said, we were second division, and when the big man signed just after me, he was just a great centre-half and a great captain for us. And all teams need players, and new players, if you're going to move on, need new players. And we were the new players, and then others, new players came in, some from our own set-up, our own youth, like Ian Callaghan and Jerry Burnley, Chrissy Lawler, Tommy Lawrence, Roger Hunt. They all came from, you know, underneath. I'm still at the club. They were at the club when I arrived at the club. But then Shank bought players, bought Peter Thompson, great player, and Willie Stevenson, Gordon Mill. So and later on in the 60s, other great players, like Ray Clemens, to play in goal, one of the great, great goalkeepers. So, you know, when he moved forward into the 70s and Keegan and Tonshack and all the lads that he bought, And it's amazing this, you know, today's football, it's about mega, mega millions. Then, Shanks, we would go to teams who were second division teams and get, take a player who then became an international player. I mean, Alec Lindsay from Bury, you know, and Larry Lloyd at Bristol. There's so many now that you can think of. Who Clem, of course, you know, from Clem Scunthorpe, then Keegan, Larry. So they were going down the divisions and getting players, and they were all becoming international players. So that said something about the setup was right at the club. The chance had got it right. Our training, our playing, our the way we approach games, and the club was just a great club. Great club to play with.
You made your debut against Everton at Goodison. What did Shanks say after that? Was he disappointed you lost, or were you delighted you scored a hat trick?
Well, he wouldn't be happy that we lost, I'll tell you that. But what I can remember was the atmosphere of the game. You know, my first ever game in Liverpool was at Goodison, and it's a packed house. Because with Liverpool being in the second division, the teams weren't meeting in the league. So to have a meeting in there, this cup, the Liverpool Senior Cup, was great for them to, you know, to get at each other again in a match. And of course, me being the big signing that were, you know, record signing and all this stuff, our fans are going along to think, well, I don't know what they were thinking, because they wouldn't have seen me, really. You know, how would anybody see you playing up in Scotland? And I run out. I mean, I'm no John Charles, like, you know, 6'2". And I must have gone, what have we got here with this wee guy? But we played a game, and I got the goals. I can remember tap-ins. My goals were mainly 6 yards anyway. And I got 3 goals, but that's just like fate, it's like storybook, you know, it's about how you, as I said, from way early on in your life, how you fall into things and they happen, seemingly without any planning, they just happen, you know. And, why did I not go to Newcastle? Why didn't I do this? Why not? And these things just happen, and it's like on the night, I get 3 goals, which is in the record books for all time. The first game is nice to do.
Weeks after your debut, you got you went to Czechoslovakia and you got sent off.
Yeah, we went to Czechoslovakia. I mean, this is again, I'm saying for Liverpool, and before I'm playing against Everton at Goodison, like the day after the sign, and then a couple of days later, I got a club suit. Somebody got bombed off the flight, and I was given the suit. So there's your suit. So in this grey suit we got, and off we went to Czechoslovakia. And I'm still being introduced to people in the team, you know, because there were other guys in the group. And off we went. I remember getting sent off. One game got a little bit towsy, and you know, one thing and another. And I got the. There was no red cards on him, he just got the finger, get off. But it was a good little trip, that. I enjoyed it, and it was good for me to meet all the lads and get to know the lads in a little trip like that. I think we played 3 games, and that was good for me. Ronnie wasn't on the trip. I think Ronnie, he hadn't joined at that stage. He joined a few weeks later. But it was good. And I remember with Johnny Wheeler, who was an experienced player, John, and had played in the famous Matthews Cup final for Bolton. And he was a lovely player, John, and a nice man, Liverpool lad, from Bootle. And so I roomed with him. There was one or two other Scots and Team Bert Slater, big Tommy Leishman. And we, as I say, it was a great, for me, a bonding trip, as they call it nowadays, me getting to know all the lads. In a short space of time. So then we're back for pre-season training just a few weeks after that, and Big Ronnie arrived and off we went.
Well, a few weeks after the Czechoslovakia trip, we were laughing before that you're a YouTube sensation because you there was a famous sending off Anfield where you you gave someone a little right hook.
But that was against Preston, where the big boy Singleton, Tony Singleton, the centre-half, and I were having a bit of a battle. And this big fella, we'd played them in the league, we played them in the cup, and we played them in a replay in the cup. And again, where Peter Thomson was playing for them. And went to Old Trafford in a third game, and they beat us. Peter scored the goals at home. But this big Singleton had been laying into me. And Shanks, before the game at Anfield, said to him, he said to me, "Now this man," he said, "has not kicked lumps at you," he said, "for three games." He said, "If you let him do it again," he said, "you're not half the man I think you are." So, well, okay, boss. So I thought, I'm licensed to kill here. So I go out and I start letting him go for the ball and me clouting him, you see. So I'm sticking the head on him, got headers and putting the boot in. And we got a tangle in the goal mouth, and I get up, I walk out, and I'm walking out from the Anfield Road end, and a big roar is going up where the crowd is. I'm watching it and seeing him getting off the deck and making a run for me. So I'm walking out there, you know, Jack the Lad, thinking that's sorted him out. And he ran off, went bosh, punched me in the ear. I went, oh, and so I went down and I got back up and I went for him. And, you know, we were right set to, and of course the referee, both of you, off. And then Shank says to me in the dressing room, "I never told you he was sent off." "No, but you told me to like get into him." So that was, but the one in the YouTube you may be thinking about is one at Fulham, where a lad called Pancho Pearson was playing for Fulham. He'd been an ex-Man U player, he was playing down there. And again, it was just a scuffle for the ball, and you know, a little battle to try and win the ball. And he gave me a whack, and I retaliated. And that was it. And I threw a right hook at him, and I think he made the most of it. But anyway, so I get sent off at that one as well. And, you know, and I had Motherwell. I'd never been in any trouble in the 5 years of Motherwell. Come down to Liverpool, and I'm sent off five times.
Do you think that the sort of passion? Do you think that's why the fans took you, because of the?
Well, I mean, I'm out of order, really, getting sent off, because, you know, you're leaving the team short. So I don't want any plaudits for that. But I had a quick temper, and my sending-offs were always for retaliation. I never started a fight. I never went out and, you know, apart from Singleton, when Shanks had led me into it. But other than that, I never did that. It was a case of they were whacking me, and then I retaliate. And unfortunately, then you'll find out in football, the person that retaliates is usually the one that goes. And the guy that starts it, all the sneakies, you know, they're still on the field.
It's thought that the fans had the first football chant was about you. I mean, how does that feel when the fans are singing?
Yeah. Well, again, all these things were just all new, all great. And it's just, you know, you think, oh, that's great, you know. You give them a chant and you just give them a little wave, you know, thanks, lads. And it does inspire you, not too many, but it inspires you to do your best, to give you 100% and, you know, and try to win the game. You know, put the effort in. And then those chants, other chants about other players and the team and everything else, and that was what gave Liverpool that distinctive fan base that other teams never had. We were the first team to do that, first fans to do it, singing songs then through the Beatles and all the rest, and through the 60s singing started, and they would change words, you know, and say, "We love you, yeah, yeah, yeah." And he'd sing other songs and insert the names of players. And it was just, the lads who followed Liverpool in the 60s would tell you, it was the time of their lives. all at 40 going on a Saturday to Anfield. Because it was just all brand new, you know, everything. And they were part of it. They were making history. So it must have been, it was great for them and just for us, wonderful.
Mm. 12 months after joining, you got promoted. It was a quick transition after joining. And you and Sir Roger formed a great partnership. What was it like to play with him?
He was a great player, Roger. And we were different styles of players, and that is the important thing. You can't have two players of the same style, you know, bumping into each other. So our styles suited each other, and that was great. And I just love playing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Roger, because I knew he's the most honest of players. We'd never, ever not try to get on the end of a pass. If you give a ball, he would try to get to it, even though it was a bad ball. You'd hold your hand up, sorry, it was a bad ball. But he would try to make it a good ball. But his goal-scoring ability, 2 feet, smack the ball, 20 yarders, 25 yarders, bang him in the net. You know, his honesty, great. And I just thought it was a wonderful thing that he rose up from where he had been at Liverpool into the first team, and then England, and then the World Cup. And I went to the World Cup, Big Ronnie and I, and Billy Stevo, went to the World Cup final. Well, we were the only ones at the club that went to that. The English guy never went, but we went because Roger was playing, Cali was in the squad, Jerry Byrne had been in the squad, Peter had been in the squad as well. So we went to Wembley that day to see Roger playing and see him winning the World Cup. It was fantastic. So nobody deserved it more than Roger, and the other lads had been able to get a game calling him, but they were part of it anyway. But for Roger to play in the final was great, and was made up for him. Was really, I think that he's one of the great guys in football, not appreciated as much outside of Liverpool maybe as other players in the game, but as far as we were concerned, he was the top man.
And then 2 years later you won the first division. What was that like, from going from second division through?
Yeah, we nearly won the cup the first year in the league. Was a little test because you're coming up against better quality players, and the boss would be looking at his team and looking at the opposition and thinking we need to strengthen, which he did. We then had to strengthen, and I think we got to the semi-final of the cup that year, but we made at least a wee bit of an impact. But then the following year we were on and won the league. In 63 we won the league. I'm right in saying that, I'm at 63. Yeah, so many good years. but what we were doing was we were establishing ourselves at that level. And okay, we walked the second division, we won it with 4 or 5 games to play, I think. So, but in the first division, better quality teams, better players, this, that and the other. Took us a year to settle, and then we were off and running, and the following year, and they're competing to win it every year.
Yeah, and then moving on to 1965.
Yeah.
The kind of the FA Cup that the Evertonians said you'd never win.
He said we'd never win it, and as I said before, when we got close to it and never made it again, but that was a hoodoo that had to be beaten. The boss used to say it's a crime that Liverpool have never won the FA Cup, and he was desperate for us to win it. It's a big trophy then. It's a shame today because of everything else and the hype around Europe and this and the other, that the FA Cup was sort of diminished in value, it would appear. But for us and the fans of that era, the FA Cup was the cup, apart from winning the league, of course, but the cup. And when we got through to the final again, it was Leeds were playing, we were an up-and-coming team, terrific team. It was just great. And you just knew it meant so much to the boss. So much for him. Because he'd won it as a player at Preston. So he knows what it was like to go to Wembley and win the FA Cup. And he wanted it so much for us and for the fans. Again, he was always with the fans. And if you look at that day and the aftermath of that day, there's nobody like who's more like loving it than the boss for that. To bring the cup back to Liverpool on the Sunday.
Did the Evertonian taunts help?
Well, the Evertonians, that was him silence for all time.
You scored the winner.
Yeah.
An extra time.
Yeah.
A nice cross.
Callie, Mr. Dependable.
Still down playing,
it was a nice move. If I remember, thinking back, it was a nice move through midfield, Steve-O, and then down to Callie, going past the fullback again as he did. Will these days ever come back where wingers take on fullbacks? And crossed it, and I was able to get in front of people and get my head to it. The last 9 minutes from the end, that was extra time. And Wembley was heavy in those days. It was lovely pitching up, but heavy, And we were all taking cramp. Well, I was taking cramp. But those 9 minutes, what an eternity. Until finally, he blew the whistle. And that was it. All over. History was made. We had at last won the FA Cup.
What was the reception like when you got back to Liverpool?
Well, first of all, on the day when the Queen never normally went to the final. I don't know where she got the ticket, but anyway, she was given the cup, presenting the cup, which was wonderful. Big Roddy goes up the steps, and he goes up there and he wiped his hands and that. She said, "You must be very tired, and we played extra time and that." Oh, he says, "I'm absolutely knackered." She says, "Oh, I'm sure you must be." So he got the cup. And it was great. I was thrilled for him, the big man, to be the first captain to lift the cup. Subsequently, we know all the other captains have done it. But he was the first to do it, and I was just thrilled for that. I thought, well, big man, you deserve that. Just great. Never come back, and the coming through the tower, well, you can't believe it. It's just turnout. Oh. And the thing is this, of course, we get the town hall, and we're on the balcony of the town hall, and a sea of people down to the river, everywhere you looked. Oh. We had a game on the Tuesday against Inter Milan, the semi-final of the European Cup. Now, players today talk about the players talk about tiredness, but people associated with the club, fitness people and managers talk about tiredness and whatever. I mean, we had that extra time at Wembley. We had the celebrations in London. We get the train up. Then we're playing Tuesday night in the semi-final against what was at that time supposed to be the best team in Europe, Inter Milan. And we were terrific on the night. We played great football against Inter Milan, won the game 3-1, and we felt, no two ways about it, we all felt that's going to be enough for us to win over in Milan, but we didn't budget for the referee being hooky, and it was a shocking display of refereeing, and we were led to believe afterwards that he had been bribed, and there was no way that he could have given the decisions he was given on the night if he hadn't been bribed. So it was we were robbed of getting to the final of the European Cup. And I think Benfica were the other team would have played Benfica. And I believe we were good enough. That team of the 60s was good enough to win the European Cup. And to be robbed out of it was just a shame. And the history books will tell you we didn't do it. But we could have rewritten the history books if that referee hadn't been a cheat. And it was a shame for Shanks and Bob, Joe and all the staff, all the lads in the staff as well as us, you know, that they never got to the final and the chance of being the first British team to win the European Cup.
It's sad when it's forces outside the game that kind of, that do write history, isn't it? It's not right, is it?
No, it's not right.
But later on you changed position, you were asked to do the sort of Gerrard role.
Well, yes. Well, I when I was a kid growing up and playing all the football, I was playing with various teams and schools and this, I was an inside right, which was not centre forward, but you know, playing deep. And that's why it suited me with Roger. Roger was playing like as a centre forward, and I would be drop off, I was playing that role. And that's why our partnership was successful, because I would drop off, pick it up, and there's all different terminology nowadays with playing between the lines and all that nonsense, you know, that terminology used. But, you know, people dropping off, centre forward dropping off and playing had been going on before my time. I mean, the great Alfredo Di Stefano just died there, and it was just sad. I mean, he was my hero, and I'd played in a game with him, in a charity game over in Argentina during the World Cup there, and I loved him. Now, he was the instigator of the deep line centre forward. He'd number 9 on his back, but he'd drop off, come play all over the place, and you know, and that's where I got the idea of doing that as well when I was at Liverpool. But as we moved through the 60s, Shanks got then moved me back. We brought Tony Hatley, centre forward, and I played in midfield. And I loved playing in midfield. I mean, I was not a Steven Gerrard, and I couldn't hit the ball 50 yards from right to left. Now, Steven does it, he's magnificent. I couldn't do that. But I would play through balls when I picked it up. And it annoys me. The one thing that does annoy me about the modern game is that the midfield players don't look forward first. They don't look sideways and back and possession and stats and all that. It's about possession. When we got it, we had to look forward because you want to score goals. And that was the style, excuse me, that was the style I had, to look forward and get it. Try to stick Roger through. Stick the wingers through, you know, play it inside full-backs and play that way. And so that was the type of midfield player I was, and I enjoyed it. And I should have maybe got in the box more to score goals than I did. If you looked at the goal tally I had early on when I was playing more up with Roger, I was scoring goals, then it gradually tails off until I'm playing in midfield and quite happy to be playing other people in and not doing it myself. And I've criticised other midfield players watching the game of today for not doing that, getting in there, because I know I should have done it. I should have been in there. I should have said, right, bum, and gone in. But I mean, apart from the fact that I was in my 30s, maybe didn't have the legs to do it, but I really and truly should have made the effort to get in the box more to try and score from that position. But I loved playing it. I loved playing in that midfield role.
Well, it came to, it did eventually come to an end, and sort of, unfortunately, a little bit of a falling out with with Shanks. You were playing at Newcastle and you found out you weren't playing, but not from the manager.
The great Jackie Milburn, who was a great centre-forward from Newcastle, had finished, and he was working for the newspapers up there. So the steps outside where the dressing room areas were up there at Newcastle, I'd come out to to give tickets to somebody, and Jackie's there. "Hi, Jackie, how you doing? Great to meet you, great old players." And, you know, I'm chatting away to him, and he said, "Aye, man," he said, "you're no playing." I went, "What do you mean I'm no playing?" He got a programme. He said, "I've just got the team here, your team." He said, "Then you're no playing." I said, "Who told you that?" So I said, so off I went, and Shanks, couldn't you see him? Wasn't there, not in the dressing room. And I looked down, and my boots were under the number 12 jersey, because there was only one substitute in those days. And that was it. And I went, what's that? Ruben and Bob. I went, no, calm down, you know. I said, well, I'm a substitute. Anyway, they calmed me down and made me get ready. And we had about 5 minutes to go, the boss come in. And I'm like throwing daggers at him, and he's avoiding looking at me, and come on boys now, you know, blah blah blah, yeah. Out they go, and I go out in the dugout, and I was so embarrassed. I was embarrassed because it was my first ever time since I was a boy getting my first game against Queen of the South from Motherwell. It was the first time I'd ever not been in the team.
There was no resting, was there? There was no resting of players.
No. My first ever non-appearance. So I was embarrassed. What's happened to me? All of a sudden, my career's over. I'm finished. I'm, you know, not good enough to play in the team. And then Bob, we're getting beaten. And Bob said to me, "Right, come on, get warmed up, get up, run around." I went, "Nah." I said, "If he comes up and tells me, you know, Shanks, you need to come and tell me. I'm not going to do that." And I wouldn't go out. I wouldn't go out to warm up. And anyway, the boss never came down from where he used to sit in the stand. He never came down to ask me to go out and warm up. And we lost the game. And then on the Monday, we have a set two. I go and see him, and he said, "You were never in the dressing room." There's no point, boss. We were there on the Friday night up at Newcastle. He could have told me on a Friday. You know, I just felt it was a matter of principle that I deserved, after all those years, I deserved him to sit down with me on a one-on-one and say, "Look, lad, you know, you've been a good servant, but you've come to the end. You know, I feel I need to play new players." And that would have been fine if he'd have done that. But he couldn't face up to it. And we other players, as well, I know the stories from the other players. When they were finishing, that was one of his weaknesses. He couldn't face it. He couldn't face the fact that these lads who had been playing for 10 years for him were coming to the end of the road, and he didn't want to tell them. You know, he just couldn't face up to that fact.
Do you think he wasn't as ruthless as people think
he was? He wasn't ruthless at all. He did it. You might think that was ruthless, but it wasn't ruthless. It was the fact that he couldn't do it. And with Roger as well, you know, and then others, Peter Thompson, Big Ronnie, Billy Stevenson, Gordon Milne, we all had to go. We all had to go, because we can't play forever. It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it? But all you wanted was for the boss to say, "Son, I think it's come to the end of the road, you know." And we were all in our 30s anyway. We'd had a career, you know. And you just needed somebody to put their hand around you and say, "No, you know, well, I've got to look to the future, got to think of the next team, got to think of the club." And you would have gone, I know all of us would have gone, "You're quite right, boss."
So did you fall out with him? Was it?
Well, that was it. You know. So I've got a hump for him. for not doing that. And within a short space of time, very short space of time, he called me into the office and said to me, George Easton, he said, has been up to see me. He says, he's a manager of a team in Cape Town in South Africa. He said, would you like to go there? And I thought, blimey, try to get me far enough away here. And I said, I'll speak to him then. So George said to me, Cape Town City, blah, blah. I didn't need much persuading. So within days, I've got the family, got my kiddie, and two kids, wife, on a plane down at Cape Town, and had a fantastic time. If I'd have gone to another team in England, I don't think it would have been right, you know, but to go to South Africa was fantastic. You know, all of a sudden I'm there, beautiful. I mean, you know, everybody knows about Cape Town, how marvellous it is. And there's me there, I'm playing, again, all of a sudden I'm meaningful, team that want me, team that need me, whatever, and we won the league. So I'm playing great football out there again, and it was just marvellous. And while I'm there, then I got a call from Noel Cantwell at Coventry, and he wanted me to come to Coventry. And he said, you can be a coach as well, player coach. So persuaded me to go back up there, you know, and I went to Coventry. And it was a shame, really, because Noel was a smashing lad, and they're a good little team, but the chairman, like a lot of football clubs, if you don't have a good chairman, you can have trouble. And he had a guy called Robbins, who was not a good chairman. And they fell out, they sacked Noel, and he said to me, and I'd only been there 6 months, and he said to me, I'd like you to stay on, and I said, no. I said, Noel brought me here, and I'm leaving. If he's sacked, I'm leaving. So I resigned, and that put me out of the business of playing football again. After Coventry, my old club, Motherwell, phoned me up and said, would you like to be the manager? Because I'd been doing coaching courses and things. I'd done that, and I'd always been wanting to stay in the game. And Shanks hated Shanks hated the fact that anybody would go to Lillishaw. He hated Lillishaw and everything it stood for. And he had it down on me because I went to get my badge and go to Lillishaw, which was silly. I was crazy of him doing that, but that's the way he felt about it. So I went up and spoke to the chairman of Motherwell, a lovely man, and he persuaded me to come back to Motherwell. And it was good. I'm getting back there. we were able to get one or two players. I went to Liverpool and got Bobby Graham. Bobby ended up being the player of the year in Scotland that year. Fantastic, Bobby. We just couldn't get a game at Liverpool. And during our team, we couldn't get a game because I was playing, Roger was playing. And we usually play week in, week out. So, but anyway, Bobby became a star up in Scotland. He's a Motherwell boy as well. Being a Motherwell fan as a kid. So but it was great for Bobby and it was great for us. And we're going good. Motherwell's doing well. And then out of the blue, my wife hadn't settled really back home up in Scotland. Out of the blue, I get this chairman of Portsmouth, Mr. Deacon, to come up and said to me, we're going to go to Portsmouth. Now Shanks phones me, Portsmouth son, a great club and this, that and the other. And he persuaded me to go to Portsmouth. Shanks dropped me right in it, right up to my eyeballs. So I take his advice, and I shouldn't have left Motherwell. We were getting a nice team together, things were going well. And I shouldn't have left, but I did. And I went down there to Portsmouth. Now, as a place, an area, loved it. My wife loved it. Kids loved it. School loved it. And the only thing that would have let me down was a team. A team, a poor team. So having watched the team for a couple of games, I then go to the chairman and say, right, I say, we need a few players. I've got a boy in mind, blah, blah. He said, we've no money. I said, well, you told me with all this money. He told me, and my wife was sitting in the room when he was saying how much money we had to spend on players. So I thought, I've got a chance here. Because you've no chance if you can't change your team if they're crap. So I said, well, you told me. Well, I've had difficulties in business, in the housing business, building houses. So I had no money. So I've got a team that are no use and no money to improve them. Where does that send in you? Could only get three transfer players. And and as I say, everything was great. The club, big support, smashing for the mad game football, lovely area. I couldn't have wished to go to a better area in the UK than where I was down there. And yet, the one thing you needed was decent footballers, and I couldn't get them. So that was it. Now, so I have a big fallout with him, and just out of the blue, I get a call from Granada TV to say, how would you like to come up and do something for us at TV? So I'm doing nothing anyway. Go up there, do something, pick the man of the match or something, a game. Fine. Next week, come back up again. Yeah, okay. So I'm in Portsmouth, I'm going up to Manchester. And it looks as if then I'm turning into a job. And I said to Betsy, we need to move back up to the north. And we moved back to Liverpool. Because I had this job at Granada. I'm only in Liverpool like a matter of a month or two. And I get a job at London Weekend. Get a job at London Weekend TV doing the Saturday programme, which is a big slot that Brian Moore had used to do, you know, On the Ball, it was called. And that was me. So I'm then travelling from Liverpool down to London. Oh, that part of my life was crazy. You know, she said we should never have moved from Portsmouth, and then we could have just gone travel to London, which is, you know, an hour on the train. But as I say, things in your life fall into place and things happen. You don't plan them, it just happen. And I got into TV, did the Saturday job, then linked up with Jimmy Greaves a year or two later in St. Greavesy. And we had, like, I don't know, 20 years of TV. I was going to World Cups, working on the World Cups, Argentina and Italy, Spain, I'm all over the place. And it was great for me because I'm in football, but I don't have the worries. And my wife said to me, it's the best thing that happened to you, because if you'd have stayed in the game as a manager, what was happening to me at Pompey, she said, you never know what would happen, you know, because it really was not healthy to be in that kind of environment. You better out of it. When Jimmy and I got put together, I mean, he was like me in that. He was just, after he's finished football, and he didn't want to be in management or anything either. And he was doing something in the Midlands. And our boss, John Bromley, at the head of the sport of ITV, Bromley had seen him doing these things on a Friday night there, and thought, put him in the Saturday slot, try him out with me. And it just bumped. Linked up great. We both enjoyed it, and as I say, it ran on then for, I don't know, 20 years or more, and we just had a great time. We never rehearsed anything, never did. We just, and then there was a spin-off things and that come into it from that, but that was the way our careers ended up. And he was a funny guy, and I loved him, and what a player he was. You know, people talk about goal scorers, and you look at England's team today, and then you think of the quality of the players, like Roger Hunt and Jimmy Greaves, and, you know, far better players than the ones I've got today.
Just quickly, before we sort of wrap up, what's your conclusion of modern-day football?
I think the modern day game, I mean, I wouldn't knock the modern day game. I would enjoy a lot of games, enjoy the qualities of the players in it, like Steven Gerrard, you know, I think a wonderful player. I thought that the Cannibal Kid was a great player for us, now that he's gone to Barcelona. But he was a great, great player and worth going to see. I enjoyed seeing him. But I've seen so many mundane players at Liverpool, because we were bringing players in left, right and centre from all over the place, and really not for me Liverpool players. And the way the game has gone, where possession football for the sake of possession seems to be the thing with a lot of teams. And I don't want to sit there bored at my brains seeing them going 20 passes and they're still in their own half. They end up passing it back to the goalie, who then lumps it. Look at the first guy who played that ball, never mind 20 passes. So that kind of thing annoys me. I've known enough players thinking, you know. That was why Suarez was good. I mean, when he got it, he would make things happen. He would do things. And you need players like that. Too many of the others are just want to pass the ball sideways and backwards and thinking that's him having a good game. You know, and the team as a team, you know, no exciting anybody. You know, I'm not just talking about Liverpool, I'm talking about other teams as well. And we really need to excite the fans, to give them something to cheer about. People talk about the crowd inspiring the players. The players have got to inspire the crowd before it comes back from them. They've got to see something first. And the modern game, I mean, I watched the World Cup, and little Messi, who's for me the best player in the world at the moment, has a poor World Cup in the latter stages. Whether he was injured, whatever, he just faded in the last few games. And with him fading, the team fades. And, you know, and I thought the World Cup was, at the end, it was disappointing, the last few games. When it was the earlier stages and it was fresh and everybody's having a go, it was exciting. They thought, well, this is good, you know. A lot of these teams that we don't know much about were having a go. But the latter stages, you look at and say, well, how many saves did the goalkeepers make? And practically none. So it tailed off for me, the World Cup. All the press and the people who were involved in working over there trying to make out it was the best World Cup ever, but not for me.
It was if you're on the beach in Brazil.
I've been on that beach in Brazil. It's very nice.
Yeah. It's the best World Cup if you're there.
Yeah, I'm telling you, World Cups. The Argentina World Cup was great. I really enjoyed that one. I was working on that and flying around all to games all over Argentina. That was a great World Cup. I did World Cup in Germany. The World Cup in, was it Italy? Yeah, Italy. The World Cup. So I've had great World Cups through the TV. And it's just, I mean, these lads that are doing it now, honestly, they'll tell you, it's just, like, it's a piece of cake. You know, you watch a game and talk about it. At least, your mate's going in the pub after the game, isn't it? And you get to drink something and you go, what about this and what about that? Never reach him to jumping in with their opinions and that. And that's all these lads are doing. I mean, honestly, it is the best job in the world. You're actually getting paid for it. Amazingly, you're getting paid just to sit there and talk about it.
Just obviously, like we were talking about before, but Just obviously the last couple of months, you've had all generations of Liverpool fans sort of sending their best wishes after the man from the Echo knocked on your front door, and it came out in the press about your health and stuff. We knew for a couple of years, but
there's no secrets now, is there? No privacy now, because you know everything is out there on the web, as they call it, the World Wide Web. I never wanted people really to know about my health. It was me and my family and whatever. You know, I got cancer and I didn't want it out there as, you know, for people to talk about. But when it happened and the response was terrific. The response from the people at the club, you know, Brendan and Kenny Dalglish different people, all the lads phoning me up, all my old mates, showing concern. Well, that is, you know, you've got to appreciate that, and I think that is nice that people, you know, are thinking of you. And if I message you through Twitter and whatever and stuff to former players, you know, five times website, and, you know, from people around the world, and that's again is nice. I mean, it's, you know, people showing concern and thinking about you and sending their best wishes, and I do appreciate that. And I realise that in the modern world, it's very difficult to shy away from publicity, because I mean, it's, everything is out there. You sneeze and everybody knows about it. But as far as my illness is concerned, I'm waiting for a specialist to come back to me and tell me where I stand at the moment. But you'll laugh at this. I mean, it can only happen, can't it, footballer? When I'm getting my last little operation there from my urethra and the cancer in there, and I don't know what they were doing with my legs when I was knocked out getting that operation, but I'm waking up and my knee, my bad knee, my footballer's knee, which has plagued me from my days at Motherwell when I had my first cartilage out there, I couldn't straighten my leg. My knee was locked, bent, my left knee, and so I'm lying in bed in pain with my knee. I've just had a big operation, but it's my knee that's killing me. So to get the physio and look at it and say, right, we need to see the specialist, the orthopaedic. And he said, well, I'll need an operation. So I'm in there recovering from this operation, and I get carted down to the orthopaedic to get an operation on my knee. So I've got two operations going at the same time. And afterwards, obviously, he does a scope thing in your knee. He said, oh, it's wrecked. Your knee's, I said, I know it's wrecked. It's been wrecked for years. And he said, you need a new knee. So the outcome is now that once I get over these other wee problems, by the end of the year, I'm going to get a new knee. Plastic knee. So that'll have me bouncing about. Won't
be back playing.
Well, no, quite. If I can get a game of golf, get back into the golf, because it always plagued me up when I was playing golf anyway. So that's my next move, is to have a new knee. I'm going to be like a bionic man, isn't it? I mean, they're taking stuff out of me at one point, other parts of my body, and then I'm going to give me a new knee here. Oh God! So that's the state of the game now. I'm feeling not too bad. Re my cancer operations, and it's just a matter of time and see how they go, and then once I get my new knee, you know, I'll be fine and I'll be able to, you know, get up to the games on a Saturday and see how the lads get on.
And then one question we're going to ask everyone on this series is, how would you like to be remembered?
Well, I think that I would like to be remembered as an honest player. And that's just what annoys me about players who are dishonest and do things that, you know, and give themselves a bad name, give the club a bad name. I think I've played to my utmost ability. Better players than me have played, but nobody gave the effort more than me. Might have given the same effort as me, but he didn't give any more than me. So I play to my maximum. And I think fans who watch the game appreciate what you're doing. And it's like watching any player. You see a player, you know the greatest player in you, but I'll tell you what, you know, like you're down, you know. And I've said that about certain players in the team since I finished playing. And I think that is a good thing. If you can say to a player, well, you never let the lads down, you know, he gave 100%. And I feel that I did that. So I can hold my head up in that respect. Apart from the occasion of sending off, and I don't think I let the team down.
Brilliant. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, and we'll be seeing you next season on the podcast, the usual podcast.
Hopefully, yes.
Yeah, back on talking. Yeah. We're in the pub, rubbish about.
Yeah.
So it'll be brilliant. So we'll see you soon.
Yeah. Thanks. Well, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the new players at Liverpool gelling, and forget the one that's gone, because you know, time moves on. The king is dead. There'll be new players there. There'll be a team that maybe play even better football than we've had in the past year and nearly got to the title. And so I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be an exciting season.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Five Times are hitting the road again this summer, and it's the Champions League heroes heading to Ireland in August.
Andrei Shevchenko, the European Footballer of the Year, the star man in the Milan side, must score.
He must score.
He saved it! Dunant saves! For Liverpool! And Liverpool have won the Champions League!
This is amazing! Can you believe it?
Jamie Carragher and Luis Garcia host a gala dinner at the Marker Hotel in Dublin, August 20th.
Once a European champion, always a European champion.
24 hours later, Luis Garcia, Didi Haman and Jamie Carragher are at the Waterfront Theatre Belfast, August 21st. Then in September, Barnes, Aldridge and Haman in London on Thursday the 11th. Fowler, McAteer and Whelan in Newport, South Wales on Thursday the 18th. All details and tickets of all those events on fivetimes.co/events. It'd be great to see you there.
Liverpool have their hands on the European Cup again, and this time it's for keeps.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.